Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Vibrant Health Solutions Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, and each week I'm always excited to bring you cutting-edge information to help you to be healthy, happy, vibrant, and full of life. And today's topic is very much in alignment with that goal, the goal of the entire show, and my mission in life. The topic title of the show is Have You Joined the Health Revolution? And that might seem a revolutionary type title or a pretty drastic type title for the show, but indeed, it takes being revolutionary to be healthy in today's world. And I believe that we're in a state of crisis in our healthcare system. In fact, I don't believe that we even have a healthcare system. I believe that what we have here is what's called a disease care system. And even as a disease care system, we're not doing real well with chronic disease. Our Western medical system is excellent at urgent care. It's excellent at sewing people back together when they get broken. It's excellent at repairing broken bones and pinning bones together when they've been broken and misplaced. But as far as chronic health conditions go, we are abysmally failing as a system, as our Western medical system. We rank at the very bottom of the list of all the industrialized countries in terms of healthcare, even though the costs are at the very top of the list. Our infant mortality, our health care of the elderly, it all is falling apart. And that's what this show is about today, is how you can take charge and you can join the health revolution by figuring out ways to take charge of your own health, because there's nobody else that's closer to it than you. And I've got Lynn on the line, and she's going to kind of be here to answer your questions, tell you how you can ask questions, because we want this to be interactive. And I'm going to allow her to just get in and tell you how you can be interactive with us during this process. And I'm just going to take it from there. I have some very specific observations that I have based on talking to lots of people about the kind of care that they're receiving and the kind of lack of care they're receiving. And I can't wait to share this with you. So Lynn, take it away.
Hello. I'm really excited about this show too, because this is a critical piece that we should all be aware of. So if you would like to join in the conversation, you may call. If you're just listening on the web, call 424-243-9555. If you'd like to have that conversation with us, press 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're already on the phone, just press 1 on that telephone keypad. We'll open up your line and we'll participate all together. And
great. And
so I want to know what you've been learning, because I know you've been having lots of conversations with diverse people all across the world, actually. And so I'm anxious and curious to hear what you've been learning.
Yeah, absolutely. And tell them about how they can chat, too, as well, just in case people don't want to get on the phone.
So if you're just listening on the web, on the bottom of the page, there's a place where you can type in your questions. And I will see that, and I will make sure that they are answered live. So if you would rather not, if you're not able to talk to us, your voice can still be heard, because we want to hear what everybody has to say about this.
Absolutely. So what I hear in talking to people, and I do, you're right, I talk to people all around the world, and the kind of, sometimes it shocks me, quite frankly. I'm used to it by now, but even then, some people will tell me certain things that they've been told or not followed up with that shocks me. So we all have a birthright, and that is being healthy, right? We're born into this world. Most of us are born into the world pretty healthy. You know, there are some complications. There are some pregnancy complications. There's some genetic and congenital things that happen. But most of us are born into the world pretty healthy, and there's so many things that can go wrong that change that, and that often change it by the time a child's ready to enter school. You know, by the time a child's at, you know, the age of 3 to 5 years old, there are already some things that they've been exposed to that are degrading their health. So one of the downfalls, one of the things I hear from people is that they go to the doctor for a particular complaint. And usually it's a chronic complaint because, like I said, the acute conditions, medical systems handle well. You go to the emergency room, you get sewed up, you go to the orthopedic surgeon, they figure out that you have a broken bone, they help you to get it healed, they do surgery if necessary. And there are times when all that stuff is necessary. There's times when medications, life-saving medications, are necessary in the case of some kind of really acute and serious and rapidly progressing infection. And I'm very thankful and grateful for the advances that Western medicine has made because of those times. And I personally have had to take advantage of those times regularly over the last few years with both myself and my son, myself having broken my arm a couple of years ago and discovering that it was really an out-of-position bone that was not going to go back in place naturally, had to have it surgically put back together and pinned together. My son's broken bones several times in his sports activities. He's a skateboarder, and he's broken knees, he's broken elbows, ankles, and once his leg. His arm, and his finger, too. He's broken a lot of bones, so we jokingly say around here that the orthopedist is our family physician, because it's actually the only doctor that any of us have been to in probably over a decade. It's the only ailments we've ever had were acute things. And we're very grateful for Western medicine at that point, because there's some interventions that needed to happen. But when I hear people say that they've gone to the doctor and the doctor's, you know, looked at them and they've been fatigued, or they've got the dry skin, or they're depressed, or they've got some gut issues, and the doctors literally get to spend anywhere from, I would say, 8 to 15 minutes with their clients, their patients. And each of those, the 15 minutes is a luxury situation, right? They're usually not getting to spend that much time because of the pressures of efficiency and economy and all this stuff. And so they really don't get to know the person. I remember when I was growing up, we had a family doctor, Dr. Ditna and his wife, and we would go visit them. She was his nurse, and he was his doctor, the doctor, and they had an office in an apartment, and it used to be their apartment. They lived in the back, and then the practice grew, and they just had the practice there, and they had a separate apartment for themselves. And they knew us, right? They delivered. He was the attending physician at the births of myself and all 26 at the time, I think it was, by the time he retired, of my sisters, brothers, and first cousins. And he knew every one of us. He knew my grandmother, obviously, really well. He had delivered her children. He delivered her grandchildren. And anytime anybody had anything wrong with them, they would go there to the office there. He knew our entire family. He came to the weddings. He came to the funerals. He came to the confirmations, the graduations. He was like a family friend. And it wasn't unique to us. It was like that. And he would make house calls if necessary. That was the old-fashioned doctor, the barefoot doctor kind of model, where, yes, he was using Western medicine, and, yes, he could have been educated better about some alternatives and nutritional things. But he had the time to spend with his patients, and he wasn't pressured by HMOs and PPOs and keeping stats and all that sort of stuff. He just was able to practice medicine. He was allowed to do what he signed up for, right, which was helping people and getting to know them and knowing their joys and their sorrows. In today's world, you go to the doctor and you're feeling depressed. I'm having a hard time getting up in the morning. I'm feeling kind of lethargic. I don't have any motivation. And the doctor may say, well, you know, have there been any deaths in your family recently, or have there been any traumas? Yeah, you know, my brother died 2 years ago. My, you know, wife's best friend was killed in a car accident a year ago, and I'm feeling kind of down. Great. Okay, so what you need is an antidepressant. Here's your antidepressant. Go have a good life, right? So they don't really look at what's going on. And if a person comes in and they're feeling depressed and they don't have those situational things going on, they end up walking out with the same prescription for an antidepressant because that's what the doctor's been trained to do. Oh, you sounds like you're depressed. You know, maybe it's just extra work stress. Maybe you just don't like your life. Maybe your marriage isn't as happy as you think it should be. Here's an antidepressant. Rather than going to dig deeper, like, what's going on in this person? What's going on biochemically to create these problems? Is their thyroid out of balance? Do they have adrenal fatigue? Do they have gut issues which are preventing the appropriate absorption of food? Do they have dietary deficiencies? Are they eating a standard American diet, which, as we know, is fraught with toxins and is deficient in nutrients? Are they a smoker? Are they a drinker? You know, what kind of things in their life are going on that's contributing to this health issue? And I think it's really sad that medicine has moved so far away from that personalized care of what's really going on and really having the instinct and the knowledge and the time to get to the root cause and help people to solve their problems. We live in a toxic world. Like, just look around, right? We're fighting constantly to get GMOs labeled. GMOs meaning genetically modified organisms, meaning that Monsanto, which is a chemical company, is getting in and actually mucking with our seed supply and genetically injecting the seeds of one plant into another. And worse, they're taking genes from animals and injecting them into plants. And they're doing things to the plant seeds and to the stuff that we are eating to make it more resistant to Roundup, which is a weed killer, so that they can spray this weed killer on the entire field, including the plants we're going to eat, and spray it very haphazardly, like as much as they want to, because it'll kill the weeds, but it won't kill the plant. However, what they're not telling you is that if you eat those plants, they may kill you. Because what's happening is those plants are then absorbing the Roundup because they've been genetically modified. They're not dying. They're not having those modifications to their biochemistry and their chemicals and their enzymes that the other weeds are doing. They're just taking it in. However, we're not Roundup ready. We haven't been genetically modified so that we don't get hurt by the Roundup. So all that Roundup, all that herbicide is built up in those plants, and then we eat it. And guess what? We get sick from it. Okay? The other word for Roundup.
In a way, we are genetically modified.
In a way, we are, yeah. But not in a way that's positive, and not in
right.
a way that prevents us from being impacted by the toxins of the world. I mean, we're just actually getting more sensitive to the toxins because there's so many of them that our detoxification mechanisms get overwhelmed. And what are we to do, right? How are we to get around this? The chemical in the Roundup is actually called glyphosate, and there's a lot of people that are connecting it with gluten intolerance. The food is hybridized to have way more gluten in it than ever before so that it makes better breads and pastries and all this other stuff. So there's a lot of this happening. Then there's, of course, pesticides that are sprayed on crops, right, to kill the bugs. Well, all pesticides that I know of anyway are by design neurotoxins, meaning they're toxic to the nervous system. Why do I say that? Well, they're set up that way so that they poison the insects that land on those plants. But what prevents it from poisoning us?
I find it interesting that they say, well, you know, it's only going to affect the insects. It will have no effect on you, when it's quite clear that it really is having an effect on us. You know, we may not be an insect, and some parts of us are different, but we still have these pathways that are being attacked with it. And like you said, it's affecting our neurotransmitters, our endocrine system.
Absolutely. And it may not kill us immediately outright like it will a bug, because it's everything's dose dependent, right? So you've got this little tiny insect gets this dose of pesticide, it dies. We take it in, we don't die, obviously, unless we're maybe a very, you know, sickly infant who could, but we don't die immediately, but those, it builds up, right? So we're eating this over and over and over again, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, and those toxins build up, and then suddenly we develop some sort of a neurodevelopmental illness, or neurodegenerative illness. And it's like, well, it's just a matter of part of aging. We're not putting two and two together to say, wait a minute, it's not a part of aging. Or an autoimmune disease. Or something where the body starts acting, behaving improperly. The immune system starts attacking itself. And then suddenly, we're having these issues. And with modern medicine, we go to the doctor with these symptoms and we're just brushed off. And a lot of people are just brushed off as it's all psychosomatic. Here's some Prozac or Xanax or something that's an antidepressant, because you must be depressed. You must be anxious, you know, anti-anxiety medication. When in reality...
It has nothing to do with what you eat.
Well, they say it doesn't have anything to do with what you eat, right?
That's
right? And just, it has everything to do with what you eat, right? So think about that, right? If you're growing a crop for food, right, if you have a specific, like say it's broccoli. Broccoli needs certain conditions in the soil. If the soil's depleted, the broccoli's not going to grow. If you take the broccoli seeds and you put them into sand and you don't give them food or water, they will not grow. So why are we any different that we won't grow properly if we don't have the right nutrition? Why is it that we're any different, that we're not going to grow properly, or we're going to just function just fine when we're overloaded with toxins? Right? There's so many chemicals just in our hair care products, in our environmental stuff, the rugs, the paint, and all this stuff that we're exposed to that we were never before exposed to. So you add that to the pesticides on the food. And the content of the water, right, like all the things that build up, they're finding remnants of other people's prescription drugs in your water if you're not filtering it. Yet the government is saying that it's safe to bring that water into your house straight from the tap and drink it. When I say no, it's not safe to drink it. It's also not safe to bathe in it or shower with it. So there's so many things that we're being surrounded with. Say it again?
Your skin is your largest organ.
Well, that's what people don't realize. So we're slathering things on our skin. I mean, go back to another thing. We're slathering sunscreen on our skin to protect us from the evils of the sun. Well, yeah, overexposure and burning yourself to a crisp is dangerous. But we need sun exposure to build up our vitamin D levels, to create vitamin D. And what I find it interesting to note is that there are certain diseases, certain cancers perhaps, so colon cancer, breast cancer, prostate cancer, melanoma, that have actually been found to be caused by vitamin D deficiency. Yet we're slathering sunscreens and putting the big hats on and protecting ourselves from sun exposure to prevent ourselves from getting skin cancer. And the only skin cancer that has been found, or maybe there's two, that have been found to be associated with excess sun exposure are squamous cell and basal cell, which are far less dangerous than breast cancer, prostate cancer, colon cancer, and melanoma.
And the thing, too, is that still goes back to your diet. If you're eating, you know, SPF, I think it's superfoods. I had another acronym for it. But anyway, it goes back to what the foods you eat. If you're eating a good diet that has the proper amount of cholesterol, essential fatty acids, and all the things that will support
antioxidants, vitamins, minerals, then you're not going to. Right. I mean, you can override the good diet by, you know, burning yourself to a crisp in the sun several hours a day and having sun poisoning and your layers of skin peeling off. I mean, you certainly can override that. But you're right that it's what we're taking in. And our diet, if you look at the diet in the Western world, it's abysmal. And I notice this when I travel, right? I travel and I look at the airports, for example, right? I ended up having a 4-hour layover in Denver last week when I was traveling out to California. And, 4 hours on, I'd forgotten to pack my snacks in my bag. I'd put them in my suitcase, and my suitcase was checked. So I'm traveling around the airport looking for something to eat. And it was darn near impossible. Yeah, there was one or two places that had a salad, but they'd already folded in the croutons and the bacon bits and, you know, the dressing, which are loaded with trans fats and carcinogenic compounds and things that I wouldn't eat. So I had a really hard time. I finally found a can of dehydrated broccoli. And it had some oil in it, which I normally wouldn't eat at home. But I thought, you know, it's mostly broccoli. And it tasted pretty good. And I bought a can of dehydrated broccoli. This is what I had to stoop to at the airport. So case in point, take food when you travel. But I watch people. And I watch people just order the croissants and the sandwiches on the big, thick breads with mayonnaise. And when you look at what's the nutritional value of those foods, it's really slim to none, right? The fiber has been removed. The vitamins and minerals have been removed. The B vitamins, the oils, they're all been removed. And what's put back are things that are dangerous, downright dangerous to the body. And most people are doing it. 60% of the population is obese. And I know I might be preaching to the choir in terms of the things that you guys coming to watch this show might be, where you might be doing, but the point is, even people who claim they are on a healthy diet, there's so much that can be made healthier. So people think it's a healthy diet, and they go to the Whole Foods, the health food store, Whole Foods is one of them, and they buy whole wheat bread, whole grain bread, because, of course, that's going to be healthier than the white bread. But if you actually read the labels on most of the whole grain breads, the whole grain is just a teeny tiny portion of it, and it's mostly just white processed flour. And even if it is whole grain in terms of whole wheat, first of all, if it's not organic, the wheat's been genetically modified. So we're getting into huge quantities of herbicides plus all the pesticides and things that are used to grow it. Plus, then there's the issue of gluten and gluten intolerance and the inability to actually digest and absorb the gluten that we have in our supply. And most people eat probably 50% of their calories, if not more, come from gluten-containing products, which are the breads, the muffins, the bagels, the cereal, the sandwiches, the wraps, the tortillas, the lasagna, the pizza, the cookies, the pies, the crackers, you know, everything. So breakfast, lunch, and dinner in the average American home is robust with gluten. And gluten is a really hard protein. Gluten is the protein part of those the wheat or the kamut or spelt.
And it's not, those are the obvious things. You know, think about salad dressings, soups. If you read ingredients of most of your processed food, it has some form of a gluten product within it as a thickener, maybe.
Yep.
So from sun up to sun down, you are probably being exposed to some form of gluten. And it's very sad because gluten, way back in the day, was not a bad thing. It's just that it's been changed. The whole grain, the original wheat and so forth, our bodies recognized and were utilized, but it's not the same anymore.
Right.
And I think that's what's happened.
Well, it's that, and it's the quantity, right? It's the quantity that we shouldn't be having 50% of our diet coming from one food group or one food entity, right? And then the second part is we've hybridized everything to change it, and it's very hard for the body to break down. So that's the gluten part. But the other thing, you know, in reading, you mentioned salad dressings and other foods, that even the healthy brands, when you read the ingredients, they generally have undesirable ingredients. So even if you think you're eating healthy, if you're not educating yourself, if you're not really keeping on top of it and reading the labels, you can be getting a lot of stuff in there. So some of them have hydrogenated oils in them. A lot of those salad dressings have soybean oil. And now even if it's organic soybean oil, so it's not GMO, you're still dealing with soybean oil, which is a very highly processed oil, not going
to
be providing good.
I went to the store the other day because I had gone to a potluck. I brought my salad and realized I'd left my salad dressing at home. So I thought, okay, fine, I'll just run to the store. They've got a little health section. And I could not find one salad dressing that didn't have a sugar, a processed sugar, or some type of, like you said, hydrogenated processed oil. So I ended up buying an orange and just squeezing, which was fine. But it was really, I'm just sitting there going, wait, this is supposed to be a good, healthy brand.
Right. Yeah, and you can do an orange, or you could buy some olive oil and a little apple cider vinegar and make your own. So if I were in that situation, like, well, if I really wanted a salad dressing, you know, something that would dress up the salad, maybe I would buy a small bottle of olive oil, a small bottle of apple cider vinegar, and a little jar of Italian seasoning and mix that all together on the salad. So it's not hard to make these things.
See,
all you need is
the orange.
Good. Very good. Yeah. Yeah. And so that's the thing. What we're pointing out is that it's really important to learn how to make foods that are healthy for you, identify the ones that are not healthy for you and get rid of them, and learn how to make them simply. So it doesn't have to take rocket science, and it doesn't have to take hours in the kitchen to learn how to make these foods. Right, and even if you think you're eating healthy, I would invite you to do inventory. I do intakes on people all the time, right? They fill out these forms, and we ask what's the healthiest foods you eat in a week, what's the most unhealthy foods you eat in a week, and then how often do you eat each of these foods? And the people who claim to, oh, yeah, I have a healthy diet, have kind of a rude awakening sometimes, and I have to break it to them gently that your diet's not so healthy as you think. And when we make tiny tweaks to the diet, example, I had somebody a few years back, and she came in and she'd been, you know, studying this diet and that diet, macrobiotics, the zone diet, raw foods diet, and nothing seemed to be helping her. She was getting increasingly exhausted, gaining weight. But she's like, what's wrong? I'm eating the right diet. Well, she wasn't eating the right diet for her. And some of the things she was eating that she thought were healthy and okay to eat in moderation were creating problems. So I made a few tweaks to her diet. I helped her to manage her blood sugar, which a lot of foods and a lot of people have these blood sugar swings that are huge. And when your blood sugar is spiking up high, it's going to cause you to gain weight. Because insulin, which gets secreted when you have a lot of sugar, is what's called an anabolic hormone, and it causes you to put on weight. Put on fat. And you can't burn fat when you're eating foods that raise your insulin up. So I changed her diet a little bit, you know, had her space her meals further out apart, because, again, when you eat every 2 hours, 3 hours, you've got a constant steady supply of insulin in there to try to bring all the food and the sugars into your system. And you can't burn fat when insulin's up, right? So I had her space her meals and get her blood sugar under control by identifying those foods for her that raised it, and then get off of gluten 100% instead of 95%, which a lot of people are off of gluten mostly, yet they're still having persistent problems, and we take them off and then their problems go away. I'm reminded of a story that my colleague, Tom O'Brien, who many of you know and heard of, he founded the Gluten Summit, and he did an awesome job on presenting the Gluten Summit. And he told me a story, I think he actually has it in a video on his blog, and about a nun. And the nun, basically, he didn't know she was a nun, so this didn't come out till later, but basically she had been on a gluten-free diet, so to speak, right? He put her on this gluten-free diet, he got her, and she'd made some progress but plateaued, and she just wasn't getting any better, and it really seemed to him the symptoms she was having sounded like gluten problems. So he started quizzing her and asking her even deeper questions, and it turned out, yeah, she's a nun, and she was taking communion once a week. So you know how tiny those communion wafers are. For those of you who are not familiar with them, it's a Catholic sacrament, and it's something that Catholics take on, you know, Sunday when they go to church. They take that, and it's symbolic of taking in the body of Christ. And so they take this little tiny communion wafer, and it's made from wheat. And she was doing that once a week, and it was keeping her having all these chronic symptoms. And she went off of it, and within 6 months, she was like a completely new person. So those are stories that you hear, and you go, well, it can't be like that.
Probably doing it every day.
What's that?
As a nun, she was probably doing it every day.
No, I think she was only doing it once a week, is what he had told. Because he was surprised that it was that severe with just once a week. Once a week. Right? And I've had that situation where people are just having it once a week or once a month. And it's enough to not allow their body to heal and their immune system to heal. And when you have food sensitivities like that, particular gluten affects the thyroid. And, you know, thyroid problems have become epidemic. I mean, when I speak to people, I would say at least 25%, if not 50% of people that I speak to with chronic symptoms are already diagnosed as having a thyroid problem and are on thyroid medication. And over again, I hear people say, well, I've been on this medication for 6 years, 10 years, 20 years. And it doesn't seem to be doing much good. And I start asking them about their diet. And it turns out, yeah, of course they're eating gluten. They're eating pretty much standard American diet. Or they're eating a standard health food diet. And when we get them off of gluten and dairy and sugar and hydrogenated oils and change their diet, well, suddenly their thyroid kicks in. And they don't need their medication anymore. And I'm going to have a disclaimer here that, you know, this is not meant as medical advice, and don't get off your thyroid medication just because you change your diet. You've got to work with your doctor. And it's not true for everybody, but it's multifactorial. The point I'm trying to make is that your health and your experience of health and your experience of chronic disease or symptoms is multifactorial. It's not just necessarily one thing that's causing it, but it's needing to look at the big picture. And it can be very confusing and overwhelming because there's so many diverse opinions out there. And it's important that you discover what's going to work for you. And I really think it's important to have some coaching or mentorship here. That doesn't mean like you have a medical doctor that you go and see once every 3 months or 6 months to check your medication level or to do full blood tests on, because that's not going to give you the ongoing support and coaching that you require. You know, Lynn and I work together with people, and we work with them for a whole year in a program that we've put together that takes them through their entire body system, all of their habits, and we help them to really formulate these new habits. And it's just an amazing process, and you can regain your health. And it's sad that the medical system is not savvy to this or not willing to accept this information. because helping people by changing their diet, changing their thoughts, getting them moving, cleaning up the environment, getting rid of the toxins, is what really truly creates health. Drugs don't create health. Drugs may halt a disease in its process if it's an infectious disease. It may speed up the healing of an infectious disease, but they do not create health. They do not create health. So I would love to hear your thoughts on this. I mean, this is not intended to give you all the answers to all your questions, but I would love to hear some of your issues and see how we can help you. So what I envision, this is the healthcare paradigm for the future, and this is a world that I would like to be part of creating, is that we have a true healthcare system, is that every practitioner is trained on how the body works and how we can interact with that to optimize the physiology and the biochemistry so that each and every person has the opportunity to be healthy. And that every practitioner knows to ask the right questions. Like, what are you eating? What's your attitude when you're eating it? How are your relationships? What's your environment like? What do you have on the floors in your home? Right? What's going on in your life? And these are the things that are important that we need to be asking, that healthcare practitioners need to be asking in order for their patients to get well, to get truly well. So I envision a healthcare paradigm where the focus is on finding the root cause as opposed to just taking and putting something over, like a little thing over to get their symptoms in order. Okay? So I would love to. It looks like Lynn, oh, there she's back. She looks like her. She had dropped
off.
Sorry,
it just bumped off. Maybe I'm too much of a radical.
Off. Yeah, so we really, really invite you to think about your own health and your own habits. And this is not a matter of judgment. It's not a matter of making one person right and another person wrong. It's a matter of truly digging and saying, what creates health? What are the conditions that create health? What are the conditions that take away health and take away that function? And how can we help you?
And that was something I wanted to point out before I was kicked off, is that if people took ego out of it and truly worked with their patients for what was best, the people they work with, you know, this would be a real healthcare system.
Right.
And they would, like you said, they would be asking, so what are you eating? How are you feeling as you are eating these things? How are you sleeping? Are you exercising? And like you've always pointed out to us, these foundational pieces that affect every part of our body.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. And it's not rocket science, but it takes some knowing about how the body really works and what kind of things can go into making it, to fixing it. And a lot of, you know, the way medical practitioners are trained, yeah, they learn the anatomy, the physiology, the pathology and all. But then when it comes to what do you do when somebody presents, they learn protocol. They learn, this is what you do for thyroid condition. What's that?
It's
pharmaceutical protocols. Yeah.
When my husband was in nursing school, I would help him study, and I would have to stop because it frustrated me, because all he was studying were drugs and their interactions with each other. And there was very, very, very little about nutrition and its interaction with the drugs or just with their own body. And that would be my goal, is to help somebody so they don't have to use that medication and they could support their own body system, knowing which foods were best for them. because like you said, you know, the diet that's best for you is the one that helps you to function optimally.
Yep. Yes, yes. And it's going to be a little different from person to person because there is no one size fits all. And, you know, an example that rings true right now is because we're running a program called Thyroid Revive and Thrive. And that in that program, we help people to identify the root cause of their thyroid imbalances and help to them to read their labs and to put things in place. And when I look at what's taught in medical school, is this is the process for assessing thyroid conditions. You run a lab test called the TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone. It's actually a hormone that's produced by the pituitary, and if it's very high, it means that the pituitary has been like beating the thyroid up to try to get it to produce its hormones. It means that the thyroid's kind of sluggish. And so they run that test. If that test comes out normal, which is their range of normal, is actually can be questioned, but if it comes out within the normal range, they stop. They don't test anything else. When in reality, there's over 20 different ways the thyroid can malfunction, and there's over different things that you want to look at to see why are you having the symptoms of thyroid condition. So if someone presents to a doctor's office with this long laundry list of symptoms that it perfectly matches an out of balance thyroid, and the doctor runs the TSH test and finds that that TSH test is normal, they say, oh, you don't have a thyroid problem after all. Let's just give you something for your constipation, and let's just give you something else for your depression, and we'll give you something else for your dry skin, and we'll give you something else for your fatigue. And that's the way it's handled. And instead of saying, well, wait a minute, maybe that test isn't exactly the right test, or it's not the only test. And what we do and what we teach in our program is how to test the complete thyroid and look to see, well, is the active form of the thyroid hormone where it needs to be? Is the thyroid converting from one form to the other, T4 to T3? Are there antibodies which are attacking the thyroid, so it's making it not work properly? Are the receptors for the thyroid on all the cells working properly? So you see, those are the kinds of things. And I use thyroid as an example because it's a simple example. There's so much more that has to do with digestion, for example. You have indigestion. Take some Tums. Or you have irritable bowel. Okay, here's some Imodium. Right? They give a drug without looking at, well, why do you have irritable bowel? Why do you have indigestion? Which part of your digestive tract is not functioning right? And we tend to look at all of that because it's important to know. And then we look at, well, why is that part not functioning right? We've identified which part so we can help you resolve it. But why? What's the underlying cause? Is it the food you're eating? Is it you're eating good food, but you're rushing and you're talking and you're watching the news while you eat it, right? Are you not chewing well enough?
Are creating a different pathway.
Exactly. Do your genetics play into it? So we look at all. Have you taken antibiotics and disrupted your gut microbiome? Right. So there's all these different things that would go into why is this particular part not functioning? And I have to laugh because a lot of times on calls we do with people, and they mean well, but they'll say, "I have this symptom. What should I do?" And I have like 20 more questions for you, right? I need to find out how often do you have that symptom? When do you have that symptom? When did it first start? What things aggravate it? So there's a whole list of questions, right? There's no, like, here's the magic bullet. And a lot of times people will flow from the Western medical system. They get very frustrated by the fact that they've been just given prescription after prescription and they want something different. But when they come to our side of the fence, you know, kind of looking at things more naturally, they still want the magic bullet. Like they just want us to say, well, which herb can I take for this? And it's not that simple. It's not that simple. Health comes from healthful living. And we all need to define for ourselves what that looks like. And it helps to have a coach and a mentor because you weren't taught this in school. You weren't taught this from your doctor, right? This is stuff that you didn't come out of the womb knowing. Your mother didn't know. And we all need to educate ourselves. And so we invite you to come and talk to us if you're struggling. with some sort of a chronic health condition and haven't gotten an answer. And you can go and, you know, apply for a free consultation and have a chat with Lynn to find out how what's going on for you and how we can help you to get to the bottom of it. And if you do that, you can go to ercapply.com. ercapply.com.
Apply if you're a practitioner.
That's right. And if you're a practitioner saying, wow, this is the kind of healthcare I want to practice, you go to neptapply.com. And I don't know if you put those on the webpage, but that would be a good thing to have. Yeah, so those you could just click those links because we want to help. We want to change this. This is what we're dedicated for, and we're tirelessly dedicated for it. So I'd love to hear what others have to say, if there are any hands up or if people have been chatting and typing in any questions or comments or anything. You know, we talked about the GMOs and the pesticides and the toxins in the environment and food and the damaged food supply and the processed foods and hydrogenated oils and all of these things playing into how we feel and genetics. And we talked about how to dig deep.
More. Yeah.
Yeah.
We do have, and I believe it's probably Sarah Grace, an 802 area code. And let's see. There we go. Hello.
Well, yes,
hi.
It is Sarah Grace. You know, you're my guru, and so I really do appreciate the meetings every week. And I will say last week, the woman that you had speak to us while you were off having a grand time, good for you, was wonderful, absolutely
thank
wonderful.
You.
So thank you for that gift. And well, basically, what I want to say is I have a lot of health challenges, and I do not use anything unnatural on my skin, so on and so forth. I'm very careful, and I think I have a relatively healthy diet. It may not be perfect, but I have a lot of health challenges. And, you know, because of the health challenges, I'm actually on disability, and I'm on Medicare. So the ability to see an alternative person, someone like you, is really impossible. And I go to a clinic, and, you know, the doctors over there are really, you know, they're caring, they're wonderful, all of that good stuff. But they have no idea how to take care of me and support me.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are other people who also have to deal with that. My sister is lucky because she's on Medicare and Medicaid. So she can see, you know, alternative practitioners. But, you know, I can't. And you know, I actually don't have a computer, so I am so appreciative of the teleclass. Because, you know, I mean, you do offer a lot of webinars and things like that. Unfortunately, I can't join in. But I will say that even when I have been able to see a specialist, I saw a gastroenterologist because of my, you know, major gut issues, and he literally told me to go to the drugstore and buy an over-the-counter supplement or whatever for constipation.
Okay.
I mean, he didn't do nothing. But anyway, and I do have Hashimoto's, and I've been diagnosed with that. But, you know, a lot of times they don't test you all, you know, for all this stuff, and then they say you are fine, so I can relate to that. So, you know, I feel like I'm somewhat between a rock and a hard place. And one of the things that's happened to me is because growing up I was on antibiotics, you know, I was somebody who had all those things, I mean, constant strep throat, constant ear infections, and it was because I was eating gluten, wheat, and dairy, and I'm highly, highly allergic to it. So it did wipe out my immune system, and I've been had on and off dealt with, you know, toxic mold, which I'm very sensitive to. So it is
right.
Sort of like, okay, what do I do? Because I'm committed to being a healthy person.
Yeah, and that's it. You know, it makes it a challenge when the kind of care that people need is not available. So first of all, I would start with, you know, given the history of the antibiotics, is making sure that you're getting probiotic foods in your diet, you know, sauerkrauts, cultured stuff. And there's ways you can do that very inexpensively because you buy the vegetables at the farmer's market. You buy, you know, whatever is the most cost effective. You chop them up real fine and you basically, you know, put them in a crock or a jar, a crock pot container, anything, any kind of container, and smash them up real well and then cover them with the leaves and allow them to ferment. And there's plenty of recipes you can find for that, but it's the most simple one is to just chop them up real fine, and then you can sprinkle some probiotic powder or some what's called starter, or you could just let them naturally ferment, and they will provide you with so much great organisms for your gut to help that gut to heal. There's foods you can purchase already made. You can purchase sauerkrauts. You can purchase kombucha. Well, kombucha is probably not that great, but kefir,
coconut kefir. I have in the past made the cultured vegetables, and I'll tell you, I've made some pretty yummy ones. I actually put them through the Champion juicer, which really breaks them down and creates
the
liquid.
That breaks them down beautifully.
But yes, I have not been eating probiotic food, so thank you for the reminder.
Yes, so that's a good reminder. And you said earlier, I eat pretty well, but maybe not perfect. And I would say when you're in a situation that you're in right now where you don't have access to the right care, perfect is relative and you have to find perfect for you. But it's like everything that you know about, you've got to do. So you know you're gluten and dairy sensitive and you stay away from them 100%, I'm assuming, right?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah, I haven't for years. I mean, it creates too much pain. And when I say, you know, there are things, what I am eating that I shouldn't be because I do have systemic fungal and yeast issues, and I also discovered quite a few months ago is that I have parasites. And so what I know I shouldn't be eating is fruit, and I have not. I gave it up for quite a few months, and then I got back into it.
Yeah, so go back and get that taken care of. The antiparasitics, you know, if you know you have parasites, there are some herbs that you can take, but you have to take it in addition to replenishing those probiotic organisms by eating the sauerkraut and staying off the fruit temporarily until it's under control. So, and the funguses
right,
feed the parasites,
right.
And you can't get rid of the parasites unless you get rid of the funguses too. A couple of good ones that you can get, Artemisia annua, really good at getting rid of parasites. Simple garden variety, clove, oregano, thyme, there was one other one. What's the other one that I'm forgetting, Lynn? Clove, oregano.
Well, there's wormwood
wormwood is another,
and then,
there's some of the food. Garlic. Huge amount of garlic.
Oh, yeah, garlic, really. Yeah.
And then there's black walnut. So it's just a matter of taking these things on a regular basis, like, you know, could take 2 or 3 months, and making sure that you're taking clove to get rid of the eggs of those parasites. That's
right,
the piece most people forget. You've got to grind up the cloves and put them in capsules, because if you get them already encapsulated, they may not be potent enough. And you just make up these capsules and you take this stuff. And generally, I mean, yeah, there's some times when you need to personalize it, and we work with people on personalizing it. But that would get you a good start in getting that thing under control.
Well, I have done four month-long cleanses, but they're so, you know, they're so prevalent that I do have to do another, you know, I have to continue because I saw some the other day. And I think that the missing piece there is the clove. So you can just grind it up, like in a coffee grinder?
Yeah, but you have to immediately put them in capsules. So I recommend people get the little cap them quick. It's like $15. You can get it at the health food store. It helps you to make the capsules quickly. And then you buy the veggie caps and you put them in and immediately make them. And it's much less expensive to just buy the cold cloves and do it that way than to buy clove capsules anyway. Way, you know, the savings far exceed the cost of the little equipment.
Well,
so
I would
highly
fresher.
Recommend that. And the fresher, you know that they're going to have the active constituents, which break down over time. So you can't just do it and then you put them in a jar and expect that it's still going to be potent. So those are some things, because the gut's super important for the Hashimoto's, for your energy, and you've got to get it. You've got to get it healed, right? You really have to get it healed. Okay, so I hope that
Beautiful.
Gives you a little bit of direction for taking care of those things.
Absolutely, thank you.
You're so welcome. You're so welcome. So it doesn't look like any other hands up, Lynn. Are there any questions on the web?
Not at this point. I was
awesome.
Going to mention, too, like you said, with the fermented foods. You know, I'm not a wealthy person. I have 7 children and 3 grandchildren, yet I have for many, many, many years been able to help my children and my family and myself eat well and not spend a lot of money. And one of those ways is with sauerkraut. You know, because I have a large family, I mean, I do like 25 pounds at a time, but I just grind it up. Sometimes I take my hammer or bat and beat away, put it in.
Get out the aggressions.
Yeah, tell ya. And sometimes I'll put in things in there, like my kelp or dulse or what other things that I thought we needed at that particular time to support it. And then just, you know, put the top on, burp it every now and then. And it is like taking care of another family member. But the cost to it is very minimal.
Yeah.
Going outside and picking your dandelion, you know, of course you make sure that they're not sprayed, but picking dandelion leaves, red clover, nettles. You know, we have a lot of things that are at our disposal that do not have to cost a lot of money. And
right.
And these are the types of things we teach you as well.
Oh, yeah. Your wild plants are going to be much more nutrient-dense than are going to be your cultivated lettuces and kales and things that you get at the supermarket. And I found even if you don't have these things growing in your yard, find out. Go to the library or go online and pick up a book about how which plants grow in your area, which of these wild edibles will grow in your area, and just buy a package of the seeds. So if they're not in your yard or your pot, know that they're going to not take a whole lot of work to grow, right? Because they're wild. They're considered weeds. And you
right.
spread the seeds out, and they'll grow. And you'll create a wild edible garden for yourself. And you don't need as much. Sprouts are another way to be eating very healthfully and very economically. We have a whole thing on
yep.
sprouting in our program. But it's basically, you know, it's so easy to do. The seeds are inexpensive, and you grow these amazing nutrient-dense packets of love and life, and it's the way to support yourself.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
So
and then
I thank
also,
you all for being. Yeah.
I was just going to say, too, often in your community you will have groups that go out on these wild edible walks. So
yes. Yes.
You can keep that as well.
Right. Look for master gardeners and other places like that that know about this stuff, and see if you can find a wild edible walk or group in your area. And one of the things that just occurred to me when Sarah Grace was speaking and then you responded about the budget and all, maybe we should schedule a radio show that is how to eat healthfully on a budget. You know, because
oh.
there's so much that can be done,
yeah.
and you know better than anybody how that would roll, you know, and we can have just I'll interview you, and we'll have a really nice conversation and share with people some of those things.
Okay.
And so, thank you, everybody.
Good too.
Say it again.
Yes,
you know other people that would be good
July,
to share.
Happy 4th of July, everybody. That's
yeah.
part of the revolution.
Join the revolution. Be healthy. Healthy, happy,
yes.
whole. It's your birthright.
Please.
And it's just a matter of not buying in to the status quo of what's good to eat and what's not. And you know, stop watching the news, for God's sake. That's one great way. I hope you don't watch the news, Sarah Grace, because it stresses you out. You know,
yeah.
you want pleasant
yeah.
things. You want to see it. It's not like you want to put your head in the sand, but the way they report the news is it's so much more on the way of the negative than the positive. And that's not the way you want to live. You don't want to wake up in the morning and hear all about every murder and every crime and every economic failure that's happening all around the world. That's not going to help you to be healthy and happy that day. Start the day with uplifting music, or start the day with some self-help type, you know, inspirational speakers. It's an awesome way to do it. Or just some quiet contemplative
time. Some quiet time.
Enjoy what nature's provided us. Let's get back in touch with it. And thank you all so much. So much for being here. And we'll see you next week on Vibrant Health Solutions Radio Show. If in the meantime you want to have a chat with Lynn about your condition, your specific situation, and how we can help you, if we can help you and how we can help you support yourself there, go to ERC. ERC stands for Energy Recharge Coaching, but ERCApply.com. ERCApply.com. So many blessings, and thank you so much for being with us. This is Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, and we'll talk to you again next week, same time, same station. Bye now.